This influenza podcast series was recorded between July and December 2022, reflecting guidance for the 2022 to 2023 flu season. The general principles will still be relevant, but for exact information reflecting the latest guidance for 2023 to 2024, please go to the influenza e-learning modules on the RCGP e-learning site.
Welcome to this RCGP podcast on the practicalities of flu vaccination. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, GP and Deputy Medical Director for e-learning at the RCGP. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Sally Higginbottom. Sally is a GP in North London and has for the last few years been involved in our e-learning output on flu. She's the author of the online modules discussing the 2022-2023 flu vaccination season. Welcome, Sally.
Hello, Tony. Lovely to be here.
So I should start by saying that this podcast is part of a series. In the other ones, we'll be discussing issues such as flu in the context of COVID-19 and the changes to the eligibility criteria. In this podcast, we're going to try and stick to the nuts and bolts of running a successful flu vaccination season. Should we start by outlining the reasons why different groups are given different vaccinations, as it's something that I think confuses a lot of people?
Absolutely. So essentially, it's to do with effectiveness of the vaccination. The biggest group at risk of flu are older people and people over the age of 65, which is obviously slightly arbitrary, but broadly speaking, people over the age of 65 are affected by immunosenescence, which is a reduction in the effectiveness of the immune response with age. Because of that, these patients are offered adjuvanted vaccines. So those are vaccines with an additional ingredient which boosts the immune response. Children are offered a nasal spray because it's live, whereas the injected vaccines are not live, and it offers a better immune response. It's also quite nice for children not to have needles if we can avoid it. But there's a small group of children we'll come to in a minute who can't have the nasal spray because they're too immunosuppressed for live vaccines. And everyone else, so adults up to the age of 65, are offered to the quadrivalent vaccine, which is a vaccine with four different elements in it, which gives a better response in young adults than the adjuvanted vaccine we use in older people.
So let's go into a bit more detail about vaccination purely on the basis of age. It has recently been announced that all adults aged 50 and over will be offered a flu vaccination and a COVID-19 booster this autumn. Thinking about children, this year all English primary school children and those of secondary age in years 7, 8 and 9 will be offered the live attenuated influenza vaccine in school in the form of a nasal spray. In Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, this is extended to all secondary age pupils. Vaccination is also offered in all four nations to children aged 2 and over. Starting with those being vaccinated for age rather than for comorbidities, what involvement does the GP have?
Well, the good news is school-aged children are vaccinated in school by local vaccine teams, usually organised around the school nursing service. So we will have very little to zero involvement with that process. It usually works very effectively. The children have a consent process through the school. They get their vaccines in school. That will all be fine. Those between the age of 2, so those who are 2 at the end of August 2022, and school age, so 3.5, 4, are entitled to be vaccinated by us in the GP surgery. They should usually be given the nasal spray unless they have a medical condition. There are a small minority of children who can't have the live vaccine for safety reasons. For example, these will be children with leukemia or lymphoma, those who are immunosuppressed after they've had a transplant, or those who have HIV or a primary immunodeficiency. If children are on oral prednisolone, that can also count as immunosuppression for this purpose if it's being taken at a dose of at least 2 mg/kg per day for a week or 1 mg/kg per day for a month. Thinking about the older end of this age group, the live vaccine can't be given to anyone taking systemic salicylates or any adolescents who are pregnant or breastfeeding.
And what about a child who misses their vaccine at school? We give the vaccine in the cough and cold season, so maybe they're off sick with a cold when the vaccine team comes around. How do they catch up?
So a series of catch-up clinics are usually offered in each locality, again, by the local vaccine teams. They don't involve us. The same applies to children who are home educated, who will be vaccinated through those vaccine services. There's usually drop-in clinics set up in various community sites.
And how about children who are younger than 2 but need to be vaccinated because they have a comorbidity? Do we give them the nasal spray in their GP surgery?
So children under the age of two are too young for the nasal spray and should be given the quadrivalent influenza vaccine, the one we give to adults. It's a bit complicated, and I'd always suggest sitting down with a nursing colleague and going through the guidance together if there's any queries, because this will be a very small group of quite vulnerable children, so we need to be sure we're giving them the correct thing. They should have the egg-grown quadrivalent vaccine rather than the cell-grown one. And if they've never had a flu jab before, they should have two doses 4 weeks apart. It's like a sort of immune priming. Otherwise, it's just one dose a year, like everyone else. Children who can't have the live vaccine who are older than two also get the quadrivalent vaccine.
And so that brings us on to a perennial issue of egg allergy and flu vaccination. I can't be the only GP who has parents ringing because they're concerned that their egg allergic child can't be vaccinated. What should I tell them?
Yes, this is always a source of anxiety, but the good news is it's only those who have had an ITU admission due to egg-related anaphylaxis that can't be vaccinated in primary care. That's a tiny number. Everyone else is fine.
Well, that's reassuring. So another common query is from parents who are concerned that the live nasal spray contains porcine gelatin, which is against their religious beliefs. How would you approach that discussion?
So this is a common question, but actually there's a lot of information to help. If you look in the module on the RCGP website, there's some resources there from faith communities that talk specifically to this issue. There are leaders in both Jewish and Muslim faiths who are clear that it is allowed to use these vaccines because it's a medicine rather than a food. The situation for those who still aren't happy to have the nasal spray has changed in the last few years. It used to be the case that we could only give an alternative to those being vaccinated for comorbidities, but now all children can have the injectable quadrivalent vaccine instead if they prefer, same as if they got a medical contraindication to the live vaccine.
And to wrap up the issues to do with children, what about a healthy child who lives with someone that is immunocompromised? Is there any risk that they could shed live flu from the vaccine and put their relative at risk?
This appears to be a theoretical risk only. In the Green Book, which guides all of our practice around vaccines, it says that in the US, where the live vaccine is widely used, there have been no known cases. So largely, I think we could be pretty reassuring. But if you've got a very immunocompromised relative, someone perhaps who's just had a bone marrow transplant at home, and you don't want to take any risks, which would be very reasonable, it would be perfectly sensible to offer the injectable vaccine instead.
And finally, what about if you notice that the patient is due another vaccine as well? Perhaps they've got asthma and they are due their pneumococcus, or they're a pregnant woman who is due their pertussis. Can they be given at the same time?
Absolutely, that's fine. There was a lot of concern about this when the COVID-19 vaccine came out, but the advice now is that all non-live vaccines can be given together. We usually do one in each arm, mostly so that we can work out if there's any side effects from the injection, which one it came from, but they can be given in the same arm if spaced out more than, I think it's 2.5 centimeters. Other vaccines like shingles, pneumococcus, and pertussis can be given at the same time.
I should clarify that the Green Book recommends the adjuvanted flu vaccine and the Shingrix brand of the shingles vaccine should be separated by 7 days, ideally. This is because there's a lack of data on this particular brand, and we want to avoid attributing adverse effects to the wrong vaccination. It's not an issue with flu vaccines that don't have the adjuvant or with other brands of the shingles vaccine. While we're on the subject of shingles, the Green Book also recommends if the patient needs a shingles jab and a COVID-19 vaccine, these should be separated by 7 days for the same reason. But the Green Book does say that if a person needs rapid protection or is likely to be lost for follow-up, they can be given on the same day.
I think that's all we've got time for. Thank you so much, Sally, for that clear explanation about running a flu vaccination program. Thank you for listening. Please do tune into the other podcasts about flu. And if you find podcasts to be a useful way of learning, please look at the other RCGP podcasts on a variety of different subjects. Goodbye.